to their older statistical counterparts and facilitated by the invention of more suitable processors, the new machine learning models are significantly more flexible and generate better predictions. So much better that some people have returned to describing this branch of computer science as artificial intelligence. Predicting churn. Better data, models, and computers are at the core of progress in prediction. To understand their value, let's consider a long-standing problem of prediction, forecasting what marketers call customer churn. For many businesses, customers are expensive to acquire, and therefore losing customers through churn is costly. Once acquired, businesses can capitalize on those acquisition costs by reducing churn. In service industries like insurance, financial services, and telecommunications, managing churn is perhaps the most important marketing activity. The first step in reducing churn is to identify at-risk customers. Companies can use prediction technologies to do that. Historically, the core method for predicting churn was a statistical technique called regression. Research focused on improving regression techniques. Researchers proposed and tested hundreds of different regression methods in academic journals and in practice. What does regression do? It finds a prediction based on the average of what has occurred in the past. For instance, if all you have to go on to determine whether it is going to rain tomorrow is what happened each day last week, your best guess might be an average. If it rained on 2 of the last 7 days, you might predict that the probability of rain tomorrow is around 2 in 7, or 29%. Much of what we know about prediction has been making our calculations of the average better by building models that can take in more data about the context. We have done this by using something called the conditional average. For instance, if you live in Northern California, you may have past knowledge that the likelihood of rain depends on the season, low in the summer and high in the winter. If you observe that during the winter, the probability of rain on any given day is 25%, while during the summer it is 5%, you would not assess that the probability of rain tomorrow is the average, 15%. Why? Because you know whether tomorrow is winter or summer, so you would condition your assessment accordingly. Adjusting for seasons is just one way we condition averages, although a popular one in the retail trade. We can condition averages on time of day, pollution, cloud cover, ocean temperature, or any other available information. It is even possible to condition on multiple things at once. Will it rain tomorrow if it rained today? It is winter. It is raining 200 miles to the west. It is sunny 100 miles to the south. The ground is wet. The Arctic Ocean temperature is low, and the wind is blowing from the southwest at 15 miles per hour. However, this quickly gets rather unwieldy. Calculating the average for these 7 types of information alone creates 128 different combinations. Adding more types of information creates exponentially more combinations. Before machine learning, multivariate regression provided an efficient way to condition on multiple things, without the need to calculate dozens, hundreds, or thousands of conditional averages. Regression takes the data and tries to find the result that minimizes prediction mistakes, maximizing what is called goodness of fit. Thankfully, this term is more precise mathematically than verbally. Regression minimizes prediction mistakes on average and punishes large errors more than small ones. It is a powerful method, especially with relatively small data sets, and a good sense of what will be useful in prediction. For a churn in cable television, it might be how frequently people watch TV. If they aren't using their cable subscription, then they are likely to stop subscribing. In addition, regression models aspire to generate unbiased results. So, with enough predictions, those predictions will be exactly correct on average. Although we prefer unbiased over biased predictions, that systematically overestimate or underestimate a value, for example, predictions that are unbiased are still not perfect. We can illustrate this point with an old statistics joke. A physicist, an engineer, and a statistician are on a hunting trip, They are walking through the woods when they spot a deer in the clearing. The physicist calculates the distance to the target, the velocity and drop of the bullet, adjusts and fires, missing the deer by 5 feet to the left. The engineer looks frustrated. "You forgot to account for the wind. Give it here." After licking a finger to determine the wind, speed, and direction, the engineer snatches the rifle and fires, missing the deer by 5 feet to the right. Suddenly, without firing a shot, the statistician cheers, "Woohoo! We got it!" Being precisely perfect on average can mean being actually wrong each time. Regression can keep missing several feet to the left or several feet to the right. Even if it averages out to the correct answer, regression can mean never actually hitting the target. Unlike regression, machine learning predictions might be wrong on average, but when the predictions miss, they often don't miss by much. Statisticians describe this as allowing some bias in exchange for reducing variance. An important difference between machine learning and regression analysis is the way in which new techniques are developed. Inventing a new machine learning method involves proving that it works better in practice. In contrast, inventing a new regression method requires first proving it works in theory. The focus on working in practice gave machine learning innovators more room to experiment, even if their methods generated estimates that were incorrect on average or biased. This freedom to experiment drove rapid improvements that take advantage of the rich data and fast computers that appeared over the last decade. Throughout the late 1990s and early 2000s, experiments with machine learning to predict customer churn had limited success. Machine learning methods were improving, but regression still generally performed better. The data wasn't rich enough, and the computers weren't good enough to take advantage of what machine learning could do. For example, Duke University's Teradata Center held a data science tournament in 2004 to predict churn. Such tournaments were unusual then. Anyone could submit, and winning submissions received cash prizes. The winning submissions used regression models. Some machine learning methods performed adequately, but the neural net methods that would later drive the AI revolution did not perform well. By 2016, that had all changed. The best churn models used machine learning, and neural net deep learning models generally outperformed all others. What changed? First, the data and computers were finally good enough to enable machine learning to dominate. In the 1990s, it was difficult to build large enough data sets. For example, a classic study of churn prediction used 650 customers and fewer than 30 variables. By 2004, computer processing and storage had improved. In the Duke tournament, the training data set contained information on hundreds of variables for tens of thousands of customers. With these additional variables and customers, machine learning methods started to perform as well, if not better, than regression. Now, researchers base churn prediction on thousands of variables and millions of customers. Improvements in computing power mean it is possible to include enormous amounts of data, including text and images, as well as numbers. For example, in a mobile phone churn model, researchers utilized data on hour-by-hour call records in addition to standard variables, such as bill size and payment punctuality. The machine learning methods also got better at leveraging the data available. In the Duke competition, a key component of success was choosing which of the hundreds of available variables to include and choosing which statistical model to use. The best methods at the time, whether machine learning or classic regression, used a combination of intuition and statistical tests to select the variables and model. Now, machine learning methods, and especially deep learning methods, allow flexibility in the model, and this means variables can combine with each other in unexpected ways. People with large phone bills who rack up minutes early in the billing month might be less likely to churn than people with large bills who rack up their minutes later in the month. Or people with large weekend long-distance bills, who also pay late and tend to text a lot, may be particularly likely to churn. Such combinations are difficult to anticipate, but they can help prediction a great deal. Because they are hard to foresee, modelers do not include them when predicting with standard regression techniques. Machine learning gives the choices of which combinations and interactions might matter to the machine, and not the programmer. Improvements in machine learning methods generally, and deep learning in particular, mean that it is possible to efficiently turn available data into accurate predictions of churn. And machine learning methods now clearly dominate regression and various other techniques. Beyond churn. Machine learning is improving prediction in a variety of other settings beyond churn, from financial markets to the weather. The financial crisis of 2008 was a spectacular failure of regression-based prediction methods. Partly driving the financial crisis were predictions of the likely default of collateralized debt obligations, or CDOs. In 2007, ratings agencies like Standard & Poor's forecasted that AAA-rated CDOs had a less than 1 in 800 chance of failing to deliver a return in 5 years. 5 years later, more than 1 in 4 CDOs failed to deliver a return. The initial prediction was staggeringly wrong, despite very rich data on past defaults. The failure was not due to insufficient data, but instead how analysts used that data to form a prediction. Ratings agencies based their prediction on multiple regression-like models that assumed house prices in different markets were not correlated with one another. That turned out to be false, not just in 2007, but also previously. Include the possibility that a shock might hit many housing markets simultaneously, and the probability goes way up that you lose out on CDOs, even if they are distributed across many U.S. cities. Analysts built their regression models on hypotheses of what they believed mattered and how. Beliefs unnecessary for machine learning. Machine learning models are particularly good at determining which of many possible variables will work best, and recognizing that some things don't matter, and others, perhaps surprisingly, do. Now, an analyst's intuition and hypotheses are less important. In this way, machine learning enables predictions based on unanticipated correlations, including that housing prices in Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Miami might move together. If it's just prediction, then why is it called intelligence? Recent advances in machine learning have transformed how we use statistics to predict. It is tempting to consider the most recent developments in AI and machine learning as just traditional statistics on steroids. In one sense, that is true, since the ultimate goal is to generate a prediction to fill in missing information. Moreover, the process of machine learning involves searching for a solution that tends to minimize errors. So, what makes machine learning a transformative computing technology that might deserve the label artificial intelligence? In some cases, the predictions are so good that we can use prediction instead of rule-based logic. Effective prediction changes the way computers are programmed. Neither traditional statistical methods nor algorithms of if-then statements operate well in complex environments. Want to identify a cat in a group of pictures? Specify that cats come in many colors and textures. They may be standing, sitting, lying, jumping, or looking grumpy. They may be inside or outside. It quickly becomes complicated. Thus, even doing a passable job requires much careful tending. And that is just for cats. What if we want a way to describe all the objects in a picture? We need a separate specification for each one. A key technology underpinning recent advances, labeled deep learning, relies on an approach called backpropagation. It avoids all this in a way similar to how natural brains do, by learning through example. Whether artificial neurons mimic real ones is an interesting distraction from the usefulness of the technology. If you want a child to know the word for cat, then every time you see a cat, say the word. It is basically the same for machine learning. You feed it a number of photos of cats with the label cat and a number of photos without cats that do not have the label cat. The machine learns to recognize the patterns of pixels associated with the label cat. If you have a series of pictures with cats and dogs, the link between cats and four-legged objects will strengthen. But so will the same link with dogs. Without having to specify more, once you have fed several million pictures with different variations, including some without dogs and labels into your machine, it develops many more associations and learns to distinguish between cats and dogs. Many problems have transformed from algorithmic problems, what are the features of a cat, to prediction problems. Does this image with a missing label have the same features as the cats I have seen before? Machine learning uses probabilistic models to solve problems. So why do many technologists refer to machine learning as artificial intelligence? Because the output of machine learning, prediction, is a key component of intelligence, the prediction accuracy improves by learning, and the high prediction accuracy often enables machines to perform tasks that until now were associated with human intelligence, such as object identification. In his book On Intelligence, Jeff Hawkins was among the first to argue that prediction is the basis for human intelligence. The essence of his theory is that human intelligence, which is at the core of creativity and productivity gains, is due to the way our brains use memories to make predictions. We are making continuous, low-level predictions in parallel across all our senses. But that's not all. I am arguing a much stronger proposition. Prediction is not just one of the things your brain does. It is the primary function of the neocortex and the foundation of intelligence. The cortex is an organ of prediction. Hawkins argues that our brains are constantly making predictions regarding what we are about to experience, what we will see, feel, and hear. As we develop and mature, our brain's predictions are increasingly accurate. The predictions often come true. However, when predictions do not accurately predict the future, we notice the anomaly, and this information is fed back into our brain, which updates its algorithm, thus learning and further enhancing the model. Hawkins's work is controversial. His ideas are debated in the psychology literature, and many computer scientists flatly reject his emphasis on the cortex as a model for prediction machines. The notion that an AI that could pass the Turing test, a machine being able to deceive a human into believing that the machine is actually a human, in its strongest sense remains far from reality. Current AI algorithms cannot reason, and moreover, it is difficult to interrogate them to understand the source of their predictions. Irrespective of whether the underlying model is appropriate, his emphasis on prediction as the basis for intelligence is useful for understanding the impact of recent changes in AI. Here, we emphasize the consequences of dramatic improvements in prediction technology. Many of the scholars' aspirations at the 1956 Dartmouth Conference are now within reach. In various ways, prediction machines can use language, form abstractions and concepts, solve the kinds of problems now, as of 1955, reserved for humans, and improve themselves. We do not speculate on whether this progress heralds the arrival of general artificial intelligence, the singularity, or Skynet. However, as you will see, this narrower focus on prediction still suggests extraordinary changes over the next few years. Just as cheap arithmetic enabled by computers proved powerful in ushering in dramatic changes to business and personal lives, similar transformations will occur due to cheap prediction. Overall, whether or not it is intelligence, this progression from deterministic to probabilistic programming of computers is an important step function transition, albeit consistent with progress in the social and physical sciences. Philosopher Ian Hacking, in his book The Taming of Chance, said that before the 19th century, probability was the domain of gamblers. By the 19th century, the rise of government census data applied the newly emerging mathematics of probability to the social sciences. The 20th century saw a fundamental reordering of our understanding of the physical world, moving from a Newtonian deterministic perspective to the uncertainties of quantum mechanics. Perhaps the most important advance of 21st century computer science matches these previous advances in social and physical sciences. The recognition that algorithms work best when structured probabilistically, based on data. Key points. Machine learning science had different goals from statistics. Whereas statistics emphasized being correct on average, machine learning did not require that. Instead, the goal was operational effectiveness. Predictions could have biases so long as they were better, something that was possible with powerful computers. This gave scientists a freedom to experiment and drove rapid improvements that take advantage of the rich data and fast computers that appeared over the last decade. Traditional statistical methods require the articulation of hypotheses, or at least of human intuition for model specification. Machine learning has less need to specify in advance what goes into the model and can accommodate the equivalent of much more complex models with many more interactions between variables. Recent advances in machine learning are often referred to as advances in artificial intelligence because, 1, systems predicated on this technique learn and improve over time. 2, these systems produce significantly more accurate predictions than other approaches under certain conditions, and some experts argue that prediction is central to intelligence. And 3, the enhanced prediction accuracy of these systems enable them to perform tasks, such as translation and navigation, that were previously considered the exclusive domain of human intelligence. We remain agnostic on the link between prediction and intelligence. None of our conclusions rely on taking a position on whether advances in prediction represent advances in intelligence. We focus on the consequences of a drop in the cost of prediction, not a drop in the cost of intelligence. 5. Data is the new oil. Hal Varian, the chief economist at Google, channeling Coca-Cola's Robert Goizueta, said in 2013, "A billion hours ago, modern Homo sapiens emerged. A billion minutes ago, Christianity began. A billion seconds ago, the IBM PC was released. A billion Google searches ago was this morning." Google isn't the only company with extraordinary amounts of data. From large companies like Facebook and Microsoft to local governments and startups, data collection is cheaper and easier than ever before. This data has value. Billions of searches means billions of lines of data with which Google can improve its services. Some have called data the new oil. Prediction machines rely on data. More and better data leads to better predictions. In economic terms, data is a key complement to prediction. It becomes more valuable as prediction becomes cheaper. With AI, data plays three roles. First is input data, which is fed to the algorithm and used to produce a prediction. Second is training data, which is used to generate the algorithm in the first place. Training data is used to train the AI to become good enough to predict in the wild. Finally, there is feedback data, which is used to improve the algorithm's performance with experience. In some situations, considerable overlap exists, such that the same data plays all three roles. But data can be costly to acquire. Thus, the investment involves a trade-off between the benefit of more data and the cost of acquiring it. To make the right data investment decisions, you must understand how prediction machines use data. Prediction requires data. Before the recent enthusiasm over AI, there was excitement about big data. The variety, quantity, and quality of data have increased substantially over the last 20 years. Images and text are now in digital form, so machines can analyze them. Sensors are ubiquitous. The enthusiasm is predicated on the ability of this data to help people reduce uncertainty and know more about what is happening. Consider the improved sensors that monitor people's heart rates. Various companies and nonprofits with medical-sounding names like AliveCor and Cardio are building products that use heart rate data. For example, the startup Cardiogram provides an iPhone app that uses heart rate data from an Apple Watch to generate an extraordinary amount of information, a second-by-second measure of heart rates for everyone who uses the app. Users can see when and if their heart rates spike over the course of a day, and whether their heart rates have sped up or slowed down over a year or even a decade. But the potential power of such products comes from combining this rich data with a prediction machine. Both academic and industry researchers have shown that smartphones can predict irregular heart rhythms, medically atrial fibrillation. So with their prediction machines, the products that use Cardiogram, AliveCor, Cardio, and others are building user heart rate data to help diagnose heart disease. The general approach is to use heart rate data to predict the unknown information of whether a particular user has an abnormal heart rhythm. This input data is necessary to operate the prediction machine. Because prediction machines cannot run without input data, we often label it simply data, in contrast to training and feedback data. The uninitiated consumer cannot see the link between heart rate data and an abnormal heart rhythm from raw data. In contrast, Cardiogram can detect an irregular heart rhythm with 97% accuracy using its deep neural network. Such abnormalities cause about a quarter of strokes. With better prediction, doctors can deliver better treatment. Certain drugs can prevent strokes. For this to work, individual consumers have to provide their heart rate data. Without personal data, a machine cannot predict the risk for that particular person. The combination of a prediction machine with an individual's personal data enables a prediction for that person's likelihood of an irregular heart rhythm. How machines learn from data. The current generation of AI technology is called machine learning for a reason. The machines learn from data. In the case of heart rate monitors, in order to predict an irregular heart rhythm and an increased likelihood of a stroke from heart rate data, the prediction machine has to learn how the data is associated with actual incidences of irregular heart rhythms. To do so, the prediction machine needs to combine the input data coming from the Apple Watch, which statisticians call independent variables, with information on irregular heart rhythms, the dependent variable. For the prediction machine to learn, the information on irregular heart rhythms has to come from the same people as the Apple Watch heart rate data. So, the prediction machine needs data from many people with an irregular heart rhythm, along with their heart rate data. Importantly, it also needs data from many people who do not have irregular heart rhythms, along with their heart rate data. The prediction machine then compares the heart rate patterns for those with and without irregular rhythms. This comparison enables the prediction. If a new patient's heart rate pattern is more similar to the training sample of people with an irregular rhythm than to the sample of those with a regular rhythm, then the machine will predict that this patient has an irregular heart rhythm. Like many medical applications, Cardiogram collects its data by working with academic researchers who monitored 6,000 users to assist in the study. Of the 6,000 users, approximately 200 had already been diagnosed with an irregular heart rhythm. So, all Cardiogram did was collect data on heart rate patterns from the Apple Watch and compare. Such products continue to improve their prediction accuracy even after they launch. The prediction machine needs feedback data on whether its predictions are correct. So, it needs data on the incidence of irregular heart rhythms among the product's users. The machine combines this data with the input data on cardio monitoring to generate feedback that continually improves prediction accuracy. However, acquiring training data can be challenging. To predict the same group of items, in this case heart patients, you need information on the outcome of interest, irregular heart rhythms, as well as information on something that will be useful for predicting that outcome in a new context, cardio monitoring. This is particularly challenging when the prediction is about some future event. The prediction machine can only be fed information that is known at the time you want to predict. For example, suppose you were thinking of buying season tickets for your favorite sports team next year. In Toronto, for most people, that would be the Toronto Maple Leafs ice hockey team. You like going to the games when the team wins but dislike supporting a losing team. You decide it is only worth buying the tickets if the team will win at least half the games it plays next year. To make this decision, you need to predict the number of wins. In ice hockey, the team that scores the most goals wins. So you intuit that teams scoring lots of goals tend to win, and teams scoring few goals tend to lose. You decide to feed your prediction machine with data from past seasons on goals scored by each team, goals scored against each team, and the number of wins for each team. You feed this data to the prediction machine and find that this is indeed an excellent predictor of the number of wins. Then you get ready to use this information to predict the number of wins next year. You can't. You're stuck. You don't have information on the number of goals the team will score next year. So you cannot use that data to predict the number of wins. You do have data on goals scored last year, but that won't work because you trained the prediction machine to learn from the current year's data. To make this prediction, you need data that you will have on hand at the time you make the prediction. You could retrain your prediction machine using goals scored the previous year to predict the current year's wins. You could use other information, like wins during the previous year, or the age of the players on the team, and their past performance on the ice. Many commercial AI applications have this structure. Use a combination of input data and outcome measures to create the prediction machine, and then use input data from a new situation to predict the outcome of that situation. If you can obtain data on outcomes, then your prediction machine can learn continually through feedback. Decisions about data. Data is often costly to acquire, but prediction machines cannot operate without it. They require data to create, operate, and improve. You, therefore, must make decisions around the scale and scope of data acquisition. How many different types of data do you need? How many different objects are required for training? How frequently do you need to collect data? More types, more objects, and more frequency mean higher cost, but also potentially higher benefit. In thinking through this decision, you must carefully determine what you want to predict. The particular prediction problem will tell you what you need. Cardiogram wanted to predict strokes. It used irregular heart rhythms as a medically validated proxy. Once it had set this prediction objective, it needed only heart rate data for each person who used its app. It might also use information on sleep, physical activity, family, medical history, and age. After asking some questions to collect age and other information, it needed just one device to measure one thing well: heart rate. Cardiogram also needed data for training. The 6,000 people in its training data, a fraction of whom have an irregular heart rhythm. Despite the vast array of sensors and variety of details about users potentially available, Cardiogram only had to collect a small amount of information on most of its users, and it only required access to abnormal heart rhythm information for the people it was using to train its AI. In this way, the number of variables was relatively small. In order to make a good prediction, the machine must have enough individuals, or units of analysis, in the training data. The number of individuals required depends on two factors. First, how reliable the signal is relative to the noise, and second, how accurate the prediction must be to be useful. In other words, the number of required people depends on whether we expect heart rates to be a strong or a weak predictor of irregular heart rhythms, and how costly a mistake will be. If heart rate is a strong predictor, and mistakes are not a big deal, then we only need a few people. If heart rate is a weak predictor, or if each mistake puts lives at risk, then we need thousands, or even millions. Cardiogram, in its preliminary study, used 6,000 people, including just 200 with an irregular heart rhythm. Over time, one way to collect further data is through feedback on whether the app's users have or develop irregular heart rhythms. Where did the 6,000 come from? Data scientists have excellent tools for assessing the amount of data required, given the expected reliability of the prediction and the need for accuracy. These tools are called power calculations and tell you how many units you need to analyze to generate a useful prediction. The salient management point is that you must make a trade-off. More accurate predictions require more units to study, and acquiring these additional units can be costly. Cardiogram requires a high frequency of data collection. Its technology uses the Apple Watch to collect data on a second-by-second basis. It needs this high frequency because heart rates vary during the day, and correct measurement requires repeated assessment of whether the measured rate is the true value for the person being studied. To work, Cardiogram's algorithm uses the steady stream of measurement that a wearable device provides, rather than a measurement taken only when the patient is in the doctor's office. Collecting this data was a costly investment. Patients had to wear a device at all times, so it intruded on their regular routines, particularly for those without an Apple Watch. Because it involved health data, there were privacy concerns. So Cardiogram developed its system in a way that improved privacy, but at the expense of increased development costs and reduced ability of the machine to improve predictions from feedback. It collected the data it used in the predictions through the app. The data remained on the watch. Next, we discuss the difference between statistical and economic thinking in how much data to collect. We consider issues associated with privacy when we discuss strategy in part 4. Economies of scale. More data improves prediction. But how much data do you need? The benefit of additional information, whether in terms of number of units, types of variables, or frequency, may increase or decrease with the existing amount of data. In economist speak, data may have increasing or decreasing returns to scale. From a purely statistical point of view, data has decreasing returns to scale. You get more useful information from the third observation than the hundredth, and you learn much more from the hundredth observation than the millionth. As you add observations to your training data, it becomes less and less useful to improving your prediction. Each observation is an additional piece of data that helps inform your prediction. In the case of Cardiogram, an observation is the time between each recorded heartbeat. When we say data has decreasing returns, we mean that the first 100 heartbeats give you a good sense of whether the person has an irregular heart rhythm. Each additional heartbeat is less important than the ones before for improving the prediction. Consider the time at which you need to leave when you are going to the airport. If you have never been to the airport, the first time you go provides a lot of useful information. The second and third times also give you a sense of how long it typically takes. However, by the 100th time, you are unlikely to learn much about how long it takes to get there. In this way, data has decreasing returns to scale. As you get more data, each additional piece is less valuable. This might not be true from an economic point of view, which is not about how data improves prediction. It is about how data improves the value you get from the prediction. Sometimes prediction and outcome go together, so the decreasing returns to observations in statistics imply decreasing returns in terms of the outcomes you care about. Sometimes, however, they are different. For example, consumers can choose to use your product or your competitors. They may only use your product if it is almost always as good as or better than your competitors. In many cases, all competitors will be equally good for situations with readily available data. For example, Most search engines provide similar results to common searches. Whether you use Google or Bing, the results from a search for Justin Bieber are similar. The value of a search engine is driven by its ability to give better results for unusual searches. Try typing disruption into Google and Bing. At the time of this writing, Google showed both the dictionary definition and results related to Clay Christensen's ideas on disruptive innovation. Bing's first 9 results provided dictionary definitions. A key reason Google's results were better is that figuring out what the searcher needs in an unusual search requires data on such searches. Most people use Google for both rare and common searches. Being even a little better in search can lead to a big difference in market share and revenue. So, while the data technically has decreasing returns to scale, the billionth search is less useful for improving the search engine than the first. From a business viewpoint, data might be most valuable if you have more and better data than your competitor. Some have argued that more data about unique factors brings disproportionate rewards in the market. Increasing data brings disproportionate rewards in the market. Thus, from an economic point of view, in such cases, data may have increasing returns to scale. Key points. Prediction machines utilize 3 types of data. 1. Training data for training the AI. 2. Input data for predicting. And 3. Feedback data for improving the prediction accuracy. Data collection is costly. It's an investment. The cost of data collection depends on how much data you need and how intrusive the collection process is. It is critical to balance the cost of data acquisition with the benefit of enhanced prediction accuracy. Determining the best approach requires estimating the ROI of each type of data. How much will it cost to acquire, and how valuable will the associated increase in prediction accuracy be? Statistical and economic reasons shape whether having more data generates more value. From a statistical perspective, data has diminishing returns. Each additional unit of data improves your prediction less than the prior data. The 10th observation improves prediction by more than the 1,000th. In terms of economics, the relationship is ambiguous. Adding more data to a large existing stock of data may be greater than adding it to a small stock. For example, if the additional data allows the performance of the prediction machine to cross a threshold from unusable to usable, or from below a regulatory performance threshold to above, or from worse than a competitor to better. Thus, organizations need to understand the relationship between adding more data, enhancing prediction accuracy, and increasing value creation. 6. The new division of labor. Every time you change an electronic document, those changes can be recorded. For most of us, this is little more than a useful way to track revisions. But for Ron Glozman, it was an opportunity to use AI on data to predict changes. In 2015, Glozman launched a startup called Chisel, whose first product took legal documents and predicted which information was confidential. This product is valuable to law firms because when they are required to disclose documents, they have to black out or redact confidential information. Historically, redaction was done by hand, with humans reading documents and blacking out confidential information. Glozman's approach promised to save time and effort. Machine redaction worked, but imperfectly. On occasion, the machine erroneously redacted information that should be disclosed, or it failed to pick up something confidential. To achieve legal standards, humans had to help. In its testing phase, Chisel's machine suggested what to redact, and the human rejected or accepted the suggestion. In effect, working together meant saving a lot of time, while achieving an error rate lower than the humans had achieved on their own. This human-machine division of labor worked because it overcame human weaknesses in speed and attention, and machine weaknesses in interpreting text. Humans and machines both have failings. Without knowing what they are, we cannot assess how machines and humans should work together to generate predictions. Why? Because of an idea that dates back to Adam Smith's 18th century economic thinking on the division of labor that involves allocating roles based on relative strengths. Here, the division of labor is between humans and machines in generating predictions. Understanding the division of labor involves determining which aspects of prediction are best performed by humans or machines. This enables us to identify their distinctive roles. Where humans are poor at prediction. An old psychology experiment gives subjects a random series of X's and O's and asks them to predict what the next one will be. For instance, they may see O, XX, OX, 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 OXX, OOXX, OX, OXXX, OXX. For a sequence like this, most people realize that there are slightly more X's than O's. If you count, you'll see it's 60% X's, 40% O's. So, they guess X most of the time, but throw in some O's to reflect that balance. However, if you want to maximize your chances of a correct prediction, you would always choose X. Then you would be right, 60% of the time. If you randomize 60-40, as most participants do, your prediction ends up being correct 52% of the time, only slightly better than if you had not bothered to assess relative frequencies of X's and O's, and instead just guessed one or the other, 50-50. What such experiments tell us is that humans are poor statisticians, even in situations when they are not too bad at assessing probabilities. No prediction machine would make an error like this. But perhaps humans don't take such tasks seriously, since they may feel as if they are playing a game. Would they make similar errors if the consequences are decidedly not game-like? The answer, demonstrated over many experiments by psychologists Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, is decidedly yes. When they told people to consider two hospitals, one with 45 births per day and another with 15 births per day, and asked which hospital would have more days when 60% or more of the babies born are boys, very few gave the correct answer, the smaller hospital. The smaller hospital is correct because the larger the number of events, in this case births, the likelier each daily outcome will be close to the average, in this case 50%. To see how this works, imagine you are flipping coins. You are more likely to get heads every time if you flip 5 coins than if you flip 50 coins. Thus, the smaller hospital, precisely because it has fewer births, is more likely to have more extreme outcomes away from the average. Several books have been written about such heuristics and biases. Many people find it challenging to make predictions based on sound statistical principles, which is precisely why they bring in experts. Unfortunately, those experts can exhibit the same biases and difficulties with statistics when making decisions. These biases plague fields as diverse as medicine, law, sports, and business. Tversky, along with researchers at Harvard Medical School, presented physicians with 2 treatments for lung cancer, radiation or surgery. The 5-year survival rate recommends surgery. 2 groups of participants received different ways of presenting information about the short-term survival rate of surgery, which is riskier than radiation. When told that the 1-month survival rate is 90%, 84% of physicians chose surgery. But that rate fell to 50% when told that there is a 10% mortality in the first month. Both these phrases said the same thing. But how the researchers framed the information resulted in major changes in the decision. A machine would not have this outcome. Kahneman identifies many other situations where experts did not predict well when facing complex information. Experienced radiologists contradicted themselves 1 in 5 times when evaluating X-rays. Auditors, pathologists, psychologists, and managers exhibited similar inconsistencies. Kahneman concludes that if there is a way of predicting using a formula instead of a human, the formula should be considered seriously. Poor expert prediction was the centerpiece of Michael Lewis's Moneyball. The Oakland Athletics baseball team faced a problem when, after three of their best players left, the team did not have the financial resources to recruit replacements. The A's general manager, Billy Beane, played by Brad Pitt in the film, used a statistical system developed by Bill James to predict player performance. With this sabermetrics system, Beane and his analysts overruled the recommendations of the A's scouts and picked their own team. Despite a modest budget, the A's outperformed their rivals all the way to the World Series in 2002. At the heart of the new approach was a move away from indicators they had previously thought important, such as stolen bases and batting average, to others, such as on-base performance and slugging percentage. It was also a move away from the scouts' sometimes bizarre heuristics. As one scout in the movie remarks, "He's got an ugly girlfriend." Ugly girlfriend means no confidence. In light of decision-making algorithms like that, it's no surprise that data-driven predictions were often able to outcompete human ones in baseball. The newly emphasized metrics accounted for a player's contribution to the performance of the team as a whole. The new prediction machine enabled the Oakland A's to identify players who were lesser-known quantities compared to those evaluated traditionally, and thus better value in terms of lower price relative to their impact on team performance. Absent prediction, these were prospects that other teams had undervalued. The A's capitalized on those biases. Perhaps the clearest indication of difficulties with human prediction, even by experienced and powerful experts, comes from a study of U.S. judges' bail-granting decisions. In the United States, there are 10 million such decisions each year, and whether someone receives bail or not is very consequential for family, job, and other personal issues, not to mention the cost of prison for the government. Judges must base their decisions on whether the defendant will flee or commit other crimes if released on bail, not whether an eventual conviction is likely. The decision criteria are clear and well-defined. The study used machine learning to develop an algorithm that predicted the probability that a given defendant would reoffend or flee while on bail. The training data was extensive. 750,000 people who were granted bail in New York City between 2008 and 2013. The information included prior rap sheets, the crimes people were accused of, and demographic information. The machine made better predictions than the human judges. For instance, for the 1% of defendants that the machine classified as riskiest, it predicted that 62% would commit crimes while out on bail. Nevertheless, the human judges, who did not have access to the machine predictions, opted to release almost half of them. The machine predictions were reasonably accurate, with 63% of the machine-identified high-risk offenders actually committing a crime while on bail, and over half not appearing at the next court date. 5% of those the machine identified as high-risk committed rape or murder while on bail. By following the recommendations of the machine, the judges could have released the same number of defendants and reduced the crime rate of those let out on bail by 3/4. Or they could have kept the crime rate the same and jailed half as many additional defendants. What is going on here? Why do judges assess so differently than prediction machines? One possibility is that judges use information unavailable to the algorithm, such as the defendant's appearance and demeanor in court. That information might be useful, or it might be deceiving. Given the high crime rate of those released, it's not unreasonable to conclude that it is more likely the latter. The judges' predictions are fairly horrible. The study provides plenty of additional evidence to support this unfortunate conclusion. Prediction proves so difficult for humans in this situation because of the complexity of the factors that might explain crime rates. Prediction machines are much better than humans at factoring in complex interactions among different indicators. So, while you might believe that a past criminal record may mean that a defendant is a bigger flight risk, The machine may have discovered that is only the case if the defendant has been unemployed for a certain period of time. In other words, the interaction effect may be the most important, and as the number of dimensions for such interactions grows, humans' ability to form accurate predictions diminishes. These biases don't just show up in medicine, baseball, and law. They are a constant feature of professional work. Economists have found that managers and workers often engage in prediction, and prediction with confidence, unaware they are doing a poor job. In a study of hiring across 15 low-skilled service firms, Mitchell Hoffman, Lisa Kahn, and Danielle Lee found that when the firms used an objective and verifiable test, along with normal interviews, there was a 15% bump in the job tenure of hires relative to when they made hiring decisions based on interviews alone. For these jobs, managers were instructed to maximize tenure. The test itself was extensive, including cognitive abilities and fit-for-job indicators. Also, when the discretion of hiring managers was restricted, preventing managers from overruling test scores when those scores were unfavorable, an even higher job tenure and a reduced quit rate occurred. So, even when instructed to maximize tenure, when experienced at hiring, and when given fairly accurate machine predictions, the managers still made poor predictions. Where machines are poor at prediction. Former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld once said, "There are known knowns, there are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know." And if one looks throughout the history of our country and other free countries, it is the latter category that tend to be the difficult ones. This provides a useful structure for understanding the conditions under which prediction machines falter. First, known knowns are when we have rich data, so we know we can make good predictions. Second, known unknowns are when there is too little data, so we know that prediction will be difficult. Third, unknown unknowns are those events that are not captured by past experience or what is present in the data but are nonetheless possible, so prediction is difficult, although we may not realize it. Finally, a category Rumsfeld did not recognize, unknown knowns, is when an association that appears to be strong in the past is the result of some unknown or unobserved factor that changes over time and makes predictions we thought we could make unreliable. Prediction machines fail precisely where it is hard to predict based on the well-understood limits in statistics. Known knowns. With rich data, machine production can work well. The machine knows the situation, in the sense that it supplies a good prediction. And we know the prediction is good. This is the sweet spot for the current generation of machine intelligence. Fraud detection, medical diagnosis, baseball players, and bail decisions all fall under this category. Known unknowns. Even the best prediction models of today, and in the near future, require large amounts of data, meaning we know our predictions will be relatively poor in situations where we do not have much data. We know that we don't know. Known unknowns. We might not have much data because some events are rare, so predicting them is challenging. U.S. presidential elections happen only every 4 years, and the candidates and political environment change. Predicting a presidential election outcome a few years out is nearly impossible. The 2016 election showed that even predicting the outcome a few days out, or on the day of the election, is difficult. Major earthquakes are sufficiently, and thankfully, rare that predicting when, where, and how large they will be has thus far proven elusive. Yes, seismologists are working on this. In contrast to machines, humans are sometimes extremely good at prediction with little data. We can recognize a face after seeing it only once or twice, even if we see it from a different angle. We can identify a fourth-grade classmate 40 years later, despite numerous changes in appearance. From a very young age, we can guess the trajectory of a ball, even if we aren't always coordinated enough to catch it.